It seems inevitable that at some point in our lives we'll experience some periods of loneliness. Maybe moving into a new city or leaving the familiarity of your parents' house. Maybe it's too much time at home with kids, or maybe as we grow older. But loneliness can be more complicated and more long-lasting than those isolated moments. By 2030, researchers are predicting loneliness to be an epidemic. It's been described by a former U.S. Surgeon General as one of the country's most pressing health risks. Think about a time in your life when you felt lonely, maybe alone in another country, at home with a new kid, alone, spending a holiday by yourself. Call 800-642-1234 with your story. That's 800-642-1234, or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Kristen Radke is the art director and deputy publisher of The Believer. She wrote and illustrated the piece, What's the Loneliest You've Ever Been, for The Atlantic. And she's working on an essay collection called Seek You, Essays on American Loneliness. That's due out in a couple of years. Kristen, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
You wrote in The Atlantic that when you started talking about loneliness, that you're writing about it, a lot of people had loneliness stories.
Yeah, I'm writing this book about loneliness, as you mentioned, and I've been talking to a lot of scientists about loneliness and how loneliness affects our bodies, and I was really shocked by some of the research and studies they found. Like you mentioned, a couple of the statistics, but scientists are finding that if you're lonely for a prolonged period of time, if you're chronically lonely, it can actually start remapping the makeup of your cells. So I started just casually talking to friends about this. And I was amazed by how quickly friends or even strangers just started sharing their loneliest stories.
What kind of stories? Give us a sampling of the kinds of stories you heard.
A lot of them are about, as you mentioned, moments of transition. I think moments of transition can be really lonely, after having a child or a move or after a breakup or divorce. But a lot of memories, too, that people recalled were from really long stretches of time. A lot of people talked about childhood. I know childhood can be really lonely because it can feel very confining. Or a city that they lived in for years in which they didn't have a lot of connection.
And how did people talk about this? Did this seem like a powerful memory to them?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's certainly a stigma about loneliness. I think we're afraid to talk about it and admit it because it seems to like admit some sort of fault within us. I think we've worked to destigmatize depression, but I don't think we've done that with loneliness. So I think people are suddenly kind of excited to talk about it when they feel licensed to.
Why is it that there's a stigma there? Is it that depression, we're understanding this is something physically out of your control, but loneliness,
exactly,
we might blame ourselves for?
Exactly. It's like saying, oh, there must be something wrong with me, or people don't like me. But what scientists are discovering is that loneliness actually has nothing at all to do with the community that you're a part of. You can have a huge network of support, but if you don't feel like that support is enough for you, you still feel lonely. So it's about the quality that you're getting in your life. You may spend weeks alone and not feel loneliness at all, or you may spend weeks in close proximity to other people and still crave something different. So everyone just has a different threshold.
And you write, and this is an interesting point you made in The Atlantic, that we have this strong, silent type as a role model in American culture, this idea that we're independent. We need our own space in a lot of ways. There's a tension between that as a positive value and it sort of bleeding naturally into loneliness at the same time.
Absolutely. I think also as Midwesterners, I think that's a very Midwestern sensibility to sort of handle things yourself, take care of things on your own. And in a certain way, that's great. I think it's great that we have Americans have this sort of sense of independence, but it comes, I think, sometimes at a cost, too.
Right. Did I hear, Kristen, you're from Wisconsin yourself?
I'm from Green Bay.
Now, do you see different attitudes or feelings about loneliness since you've left the Midwest?
Well, I think every city and every town is so different in the way that we interact with one another in terms of communities. I mean, for me, the loneliest I ever felt was when I lived in a town in which there wasn't a lot of walking. Like, I never would bump into people or run into people because everyone was just always on the interstate, and I missed those sort of happenstance encounters, which certainly now I live in New York, we're always sort of in really close proximity to one another.
Talking to Christine Radke. She's working on an essay collection called Seek You, Essays on American Loneliness. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you have thoughts on why we're apparently more and more lonely, if you have a story you'd care to share yourself, we've got Ben on the line with us in Madison. Ben, hi.
Hello. I'd like to add to this. I think one of the causes for loneliness is the smartphone addiction. When everything's at your fingertips, why would you make yourself vulnerable to a stranger, whether that's someone just in small talk or chatting with you about something, or if someone is flirting with you and trying to connect with you and get your phone number? I see this perhaps the worst among, I'm not going to pick on millennials, but people more towards their 20s. They're just completely absorbed in their phone, and they wouldn't notice if the building they were in caught fire. If it did, they would probably find out from social media.
Ben, thanks for the call. I want to jump in. Kristen, do you think that our technology is helping us isolate ourselves more, and even though we might feel connected, we're missing something?
I think it really depends on the circumstance. I completely agree that it's now a tool that allows us to stay home or to stay in our spaces. And one of the things that encourages us to go out and do something on a really basic level is sheer boredom. If we're bored, if we have nothing to do, we're more likely to propel ourselves in front of other people. But if we have, you know, endless streaming shows and the internet to entertain us, we might be less willing to put ourselves out there. On the other hand, when you think about older people or people with disabilities or people who are separated through work from their families or something like that, something like a smartphone can be a really helpful tool.
Now, an interesting thing, thanks for that call, Ben, an interesting thing, Kristen, about your piece in The Atlantic and your book, you're writing about loneliness. You're also illustrating about loneliness. So it's a graphic, not novel, graphic nonfiction, I guess you're working on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell us about the images and how you're trying to capture those stories.
Yeah, so I'm drawing a lot of portraits. I like drawing people. The project actually started in a series for The New Yorker in which I was drawing people alone in public settings because I'm really interested in how, in a city as congested as New York, we do still spend a lot of time alone. And I love that juxtaposition of the really hectic, crowded city with an isolated figure in front.
What are you hoping comes out of having these conversations, getting these stories, these essays and illustrations of loneliness?
It's a great question. I don't know. I guess I hope that we can talk about this. I mean, one of the things I find so amazing about loneliness is that it's such a universal feeling. It's something that everyone's felt at some point, and in a way, our desire to connect with one another through those shared feelings of loneliness can be really powerful.
You mentioned earlier, as people talked about it, you got the sense that there was a hunger to talk about. Is this something that we should be talking about on talk shows, writing about, talking to our friends about more?
Absolutely. I mean, one of the reasons I think it's become such a problem is because often we don't even know how to articulate it ourselves when we're feeling lonely, and then we don't know how to take the steps to join a community or to feel more connected.
Time for a quick call. Caleb is with us in Westby. Caleb, hi. Just a brief moment.
Hey there. I was just going to say that I think maybe a contributing factor to the situation is the perspective that people have on loneliness, or rather on being alone. I was just wondering if maybe some people, when they're alone, find it more rejuvenating and it isn't as negative of an issue as it is for others.
Caleb, thanks for the call. And Kristen, that fits into what you were saying earlier. There may be a difference between being alone and feeling lonely.
Absolutely. Isolation or solitude and loneliness are two totally different things. It's completely true.
All right, Caleb, thanks for the call. And Kristen, thank you so much for joining us today. Welcome back to Wisconsin.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Kristen Radke is the art director and deputy publisher of The Believer. She wrote and illustrated the piece we've been talking about called What's the Loneliest You've Ever Been? That appeared in The Atlantic. And Kristen's working on an essay collection called CQ, Essays on American Loneliness. That's due out in 2020. Still time for you to share your thoughts on loneliness and why it seems to be on the rise in the United States. You can tweet us at Central Time WPR. Let us know what you think.